All right. So I wanted to talk about, or at least bring up two topics. People afterwards last week came up to me regarding two things, and I'm going to be getting to those in depth today. One is about what do I really mean by story, and what is the difference between facts and interpretive thought. So I just want to put that out there that I will be going to those in depth. I wish I could have said more when you spoke, Sherry, last time, because there's more to that answer, and so I'll be filling that in tonight. Okay, wonderful. Okay, so tonight, as I said, we're going to be talking about depressive states, loss, kind of negative experiences we have with our mind. And really, when we're thinking about these types of experiences inside, we are really talking about the three poisons or defilements of the mind in Buddha, in Buddhist psychology or in Buddhism, those being desire, aversion, and delusion. And I am primarily talking about interpretive thought here, especially with delusion. So delusion is not seeing things clearly, not seeing things as they are. And the mind, which is completely related to the ego, always wants whatever shows up to be different. You either want more of something, less of something, or you see it inaccurately. That's just the way our mind works. So to give you an example of that, in my own life, we all have, you know, when we do metta, people are always asking, who's your difficult person? Well, my difficult person nowadays seems to always be my sister-in-law. I'm sad to say, but it's just true. She's one of my greatest teachers. And so whenever I see her, there's oftentimes an experience that I have of being rejected, almost always. Now, that's my mind's interpretation of the event. So what normally happens is she might say something because she's upset, or she might tell me that she doesn't want me to come around for the rest of the weekend, something like that, around her family. And so if that occurs, my mind will immediately interpret that as, oh, I'm being rejected. That's an interpretive thought. That's actually not what's true. What's true is she said, I want you to not stay for the rest of the weekend. That's all she said. Now, I know that with my compassionate heart that she has an anxiety issue, that she has severe trauma in her history, and really she's just taking care of herself. It's really about her having boundaries so she takes care of herself. That's what's true. But my mind, almost always, the initial thoughts that come up are, oh, here she is doing that thing, and I don't like that thing, all these thoughts around this. So we're going to do a lot of work today on what is the first thought or thoughts you have to interpret an event, and then working your way back to the actual facts in the moment. If someone's upset at you and leaves, rather than thinking I was abandoned, what's true is they left the room. Okay. That's really what's true. Yeah. So it sounds simple, very difficult to do when we're triggered, right? So that's one of the processes that we'll be talking about. And those processes are always about the three poisons, about wanting more of something, wanting less of something, or some inaccurate interpretation. Tonight I'll also be talking about the five hindrances around sloth and torpor and doubt. Those are the hindrances that show up the most, it seems, with depressed mood or depressed states. And of the seven factors of enlightenment, we'll be working with investigation of thought and energy and effort. Because with depressive states, you almost always have to move energy upward. You have to find some energy to do something rather than being so fatigued and low. One of the first differentiations I want to make is the difference between sadness and depression. So sadness does have a movement to it, and whereas depression, it oftentimes feels like there's no movement and you feel stuck, and it just stays. One of the research differentiating these two things talks about how any type of suppression of any emotion at all, doesn't matter what it is, can lead to depression because you are tamping down your emotional experience. So one of the first things to think about is trying to be with every emotion as it arises and try not to tamp down or move away from any of them. Sometimes people move away from joy. Sometimes that's even difficult, right? So really everyone is very different on which emotions are easy to hold and which ones are difficult to hold. So you want to really learn to be with your sadness so it does not move into depression. For me, when I move from my thoughts into my body and I'm simply with the emotional experience of sadness, that almost always takes me deeper inside myself, and I always look for a sweetness. And then I know that I'm actually more in the present moment. Because for me, and for I know for a lot of people this happens, not for everyone, but I would check on this for yourself. When you're feeling sad, try to look for some level of sweetness at it, because the deeper you go inside yourself, if you allow the sadness to take you deeper inside, there's a way where you get more connected to yourself. And there is a sweetness there, like a sweet sadness. So that's one thing to think about. Another differentiation between there's sadness and the depression, and then what I would call dark night of the soul experience, where it really is a spiritual crisis or a spiritual occurrence that's happening for you. And I want to give some of you hope in that when I was going through my dark night of the soul, which lasted about 6 years, I was depressed for almost 6 years, truly. But I had a spiritual teacher I was working with, thank goodness, and was my guide. And so I had faith and trust that it was a process. It was actually a midlife process that I was moving through. But I would say for most of that 6 years, my experience of life was simply gray. No meaning, no movement, hardly at all. There actually was movement, but it was so slow, I could barely experience it. I could barely perceive it. So for those of you who are dealing with long-term sadness, it is helpful to be working with someone or in communication with someone who's already gone through some things so that they can help you differentiate. Is this sadness? Can you feel some movement? Is this a true depression or a clinical depression where it's actually biologically derived, where you might need medication, for instance, or whether it's a dark night of the soul where you're moving through this spiritual journey that has some movement, but it oftentimes is heartbreaking, devastating, changes your whole life, but there's movement to it, even at a very low level. Okay, so the next idea I want to present is that, you know, all of us are wired biologically for seeking pleasure and avoiding pain, which is the egoic activity that we're talking about in the mind. But as animals, that's what we're wired for. We're not wired for peace and calm. We're wired to survive. So in our modern-day culture, that wiring doesn't work so well. Right? We're almost always moving through fight or flight modes to try to get our needs met and stressed because of all the difficult things that we're dealing with all the time. So you just know that this is natural and it is not your fault. So often we personalize the mind's activity or we personalize this trying to avoid pain and seeking pleasure always, every moment, as opposed to simply being present and allowing things to be as they are and being satisfied as things are. The mind of the ego really never does that for very long. But the body does. And so that's why a lot of the practices we'll be talking about tonight moves you from the conceptual mind into your physical experience. The body, if you just let the body be, it will naturally move to a state of equanimity or balance or calm. But when the mind starts to activate, then we're moved out of that into something else. So first of all, I want you to give yourself a break. So you're wired this way. It's the way humans are. So if you, try to be kind to yourself around this. I also want to talk about the first and second arrows in Buddhism, right? So there's a differentiation between suffering and pain. So pain is going to, we have bodies that feel pain. We have hearts that feel pain emotionally. That's the way it is. But pain plus resistance equals suffering. And the resistance piece is what you have some influence on. If something happens and you feel pain, that's just the way it is. But if you then layer on top of that an interpretive thought, which we almost always do, that actually makes us suffer more, that's the area you want to focus on. So in the example I was giving you in my life, the fact that my sister-in-law might leave the room, in that action, if I was perceiving just that action and not moving to my mind, I might simply be sad that she left. That would be very clean. However, if my mind comes in and says, she's being mean to me, then I'll be pissed. All this other stuff will come through my body, and that's not really clean. That is not working with the first arrow. That was the second arrow. Right? So if I can move away from my conceptual mind, the anger potentially can diminish, and then I can just deal with what's more of a clean emotion from that actual experience. So think about those two pieces for yourself. In working with depressive states, thoughts and investigation of thoughts is the first step. The second step is more physical in the body. So the first step, oftentimes, even if you're going to a regular therapist that's not a mindfulness-based therapist, they'll work with you with what's called CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. So that's where you look at the precipitating event, and then you look at the thought that was created from that, and then you look at the emotion that was created from the thought, and then you look at the consequential behavior that you acted out. So that's a good way of looking at it. However, there's actually mindfulness-based cognitive therapy nowadays, which takes that and then adds a whole mindfulness element to it. And one of the basic techniques of that, of both of those, really, is doing what I've already talked about, which is separating out, is this an interpretive thought or is this a fact? And last week, poor Sherry had the experience. Okay.
It's okay.
Okay, great. It was okay for her. Perfect. Where she said something and I said, well, is that a fact or is that an interpretation? You know, and you laughed and the whole room kind of laughed because it was obvious it was an interpretation, right? And the goal with that, which I didn't say, which I wish I could have at the time, if I had wherewithal in the moment, was when you notice you're upset, go to your mind and see what the thought is and then begin to notice. Is this a fact? Is this not a fact? The hard thing about that is almost always your first thought is, that's a fact. But it's rarely a fact. It's so rarely a fact. I would bet you like 95% of the time it's not a fact. And then you have to work your way to, okay, if someone else was in the room and heard the same thing or saw the same thing, what would they say happened? That's a good way of creating that. And this also relates to what I said last week around trying not to continue to retell your story. So, with my experience that I've been talking to you about, oh my goodness, you know how many times I've told the story in my mind that she's mean to me and that I don't deserve being rejected and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. So, my commitment is to really never tell that story ever again. It's all interpretive thought. It's all conceptualization. It doesn't help at all. All it does is create more and more suffering for me. So, my commitment is never tell that story again. And when I watch that story start, because we have tapes, we have stories that we run all the time in our lives. Whenever you think about a tape or a story that you've repeated over and over again to yourself, oh, really try your best to say, when that starts, I'm not going to continue that. And instead, I'm going to simply go from that story to, you can go right from that to, what is the emotion that story creates in me right now? And then deal with that present moment experience. That's valuable. Okay, so some questions to think about asking when this occurs. One is this happening now? Is this happening now? Is this a fact or an interpretation? Is this a fact or an interpretation? Is this a clear emotion which is in direct response to the current situation? Like I talked about before, the sadness when she left as opposed to the anger. Is it a clear emotion? Or is it a muddy emotional experience out of distorted interpretive thought? Or is it a muddy emotional experience that is distorted by an interpretive thought? And then lastly, in this series of questions, has this feeling long-lasting, intense, or confusing? Is this long-lasting, intense, or confusing? If it is, it's probably a muddy interpretive emotion. When you're doing this type of investigation and questioning, investigating what you're actually experiencing, it's helpful to have an attitude of curiosity as opposed to moving away from it. So, that's good for all things, right? Just being curious, trying to really investigate with an openness. It's helpful to do thought labeling, right? A lot of us know about thought labeling, which is when you're in meditation, a thought arises, and rather than following the thought, you simply label it, planning thought, negative thought about the future, negative thought about myself, you know, whatever your themes are. So that's very helpful to do that rather than follow the content of our thoughts. I nowadays, believe it or not, I try my best not to think. Honestly. No, I truly do. So I'd rather just simply be in the present moment and simply deal with what's happening right now. But when my mind starts to think about something, I know I'm going to move into interpretive thought. And so I'm, right now, that's my current practice, is try not to think as much as possible. And I cannot tell you how enjoyable life is, how much more enjoyable life is when that occurs. Of course, you know, I'm human, so I can only do it for periods of time. But that's one of my commitments with my practice right now. Another practice is to intentionally invite difficult feelings up, to stay with them. And that's part of what we're going to be doing in the meditation today. Rather than avoiding these experiences, because oftentimes we want to simply get away from them, we want to avoid them, is you might want to take some time and think, okay, well, I have 20 minutes here. This issue has been really bothering me. What is the emotional experience? And inviting it in and trying to stay with it for as long as you can in that moment. Because it goes against our wiring to stay with what's difficult. So the second step, by the way, is tracking your body. So once you investigate the thoughts, you want to then ideally come back to the present moment and cultivate more mindfulness of what's occurring. So the helpful questions here are, what is happening right now? What is happening right now? And ideally, what's happening right now in my body? That's even better. And then the next question could be, can I stay with what's happening right now? Just the question alone can help you stay longer. You can even ask, can I breathe into what's happening or breathe with what's happening? You can breathe into that part of the body that's feeling this, or you can breathe with it. The next question, can I make space for this? Can I just open up my chest, open up my body more, and make even more space for this? And those questions really bring yourself into a space of allowing, accepting, and building your tolerance for experience that's difficult. And then lastly, I wanted to bring in the idea of self-compassion, of course, right? So whenever you're doing any type of work of this ilk, you want to make sure that you bring in as much kindness to yourself as much as you can. So you can ask yourself, you know, what is my history of this? How long have I been dealing with this? Might be a very long time. And that can bring up kindness, just realizing your history with it. Remembering your temperament, your family history, the role modeling you had in your family, all those pieces help with compassion. The most difficult areas of self-compassion would be what's called shadow material, if you've heard of that concept. Shadow material, you know, are those aspects of yourself or in other people that you find unacceptable. And normally they do come from our family of origin values. So when you were a child, the parts of you that were accepted and acceptable, normally we tend to be okay with those and allow those. The things that were not accepted and were not acceptable that you have incorporated with that value, it's very difficult to be with those pieces. So if you are showing up in the world, if you have a value that independence is very important, which a lot of us in this culture, primarily white culture in the United States, a lot of puritanical thoughts still within our culture, a lot of us really do value independence. So if you feel dependent or needy, that can be very difficult if you have that value. So if that occurs, it's even harder. Oftentimes we will project that out. So rather than see it inside ourselves, the first step normally is that we get really upset and irritated that someone else is needy or someone else is dependent. That's the first step normally. And actually you can use people as a mirror. So any behavior that you see outside of you that you have a hard time with, you can pretty much guess that that's an area of focus for you to learn to incorporate and accept inside yourself. Not always, but it's oftentimes related to that. So I really do find, right, like present moment experience, whatever we're experiencing, whatever we're having a hard time with, whatever triggering we're having, that is a doorway. That is a window into what your deepest places to be seen. It's the place to focus on and find a way to accept and be okay with and tolerate and ideally love over time. So the stages, by the way, of meeting these difficult places Or oftentimes, this is the sequence. Oftentimes, we resist it. Then the next step is we ideally turn towards it if we're doing practice on this. Then we can explore it and investigate it using the, you know, the factor of enlightenment of investigation. If you're working with thoughts and conceptual mind, you can just label it. And then after you label it, you can deal with the sensations in the body. Focus on the sensations only at that point. That's the next step. The next step after that is ideally tolerating the sensations. After tolerating, ideally allowing, actually coming to accept them. Befriending them is the next step, ideally. You befriend them. You find some compassion for this part of you that is needy, for instance. And lastly, you open up to them fully. And that is what's called emotional freedom. When you have more capacity that whatever shows up, you can simply open up freely to it. That's the ideal. That's what we're working towards. That's the inspiration. And be kind to yourself, because you will be able to do this with some things and other things. It's intolerable. And that's okay. You just build that muscle with that as well. Okay. All right. So the last thing before we, I'm going to open it up for discussion and questions or whatnot, are specific practices. So these are some practices that you might want to think about doing in your spare time. One is, like I said before, inviting a difficulty in and working with it through the body. And this is a practice that is from the Mindfulness Way Through Depression book by there's a series of authors, but the first author is Mark Williams, and the last author is Jon Kabat-Zinn. And this is where you just sit for a few minutes, you bring a difficulty to mind, again, you feel the physical sensations in the body, and then you focus on the prominent breath sensation of that sensation, you breathe into it, and you deepen your experience of acceptance of it. And he recommends, or they recommend, saying, it's okay, whatever it is, it's already here, let me open to it. Again, that's, it's okay, whatever it is, it's already here, let me open to it. Another practice, which you have a handout for, so that handout is for the mindfulness solution. I put the author on the first page. There's mindfulness of emotions throughout the day. So this is hearkening back to what I said earlier around being willing to simply be with emotions and allow them to arise and not push them down so that depression doesn't come about more easily. So this is where you spend your whole day just tracking emotions. Like whenever something arises that's kind of big for you, you just ideally write it down on that first page on the right-hand side, where it says, I'm wrong, it's the second page. Mm-hmm. Second page, 149, observing emotions throughout the day. And you can see it has the trigger and event, and it has strength of feeling, and it has the reaction to the feeling. One thing which I would change, if I was doing this, the strength of the feeling I find less important, but I find what's very important is the sensations in the body. So for you to see the trigger and event and the emotion that arose is the first column. The second one is, what are the sensations that are arising right now related to this emotion? That's very important. I would substitute that. And then your reaction to the feeling is also very helpful. Was it easy to tolerate it? Was it difficult? Did you try to avoid it? What did you do with that emotion? The next practice is thought labeling. I've already gone over that. Just label your thoughts as you have them. Try not to go into them, simply label them. Label them and put them aside like clouds in the sky and continue forward. It sounds weird, but it really does work. The next one is called a 3-minute breathing space. And this is from the same book, from that handout. And some of these are very similar, but I want you just to have a series of them so you can see, oh, that one feels the most like is doable for me, and I like that one. So the first step is just becoming aware of your thoughts, feelings, and sensations. Step two is gathering attention to the breath, and then simply expanding your awareness to the whole body, allowing whatever's present to be. It's very fast. Many people have heard of RAIN. Tara Brach is famous for RAIN, and then it's also in our guiding teacher Bob Stahl's MBSR manual. And RAIN is the acronym of recognize what's present now. The A is allow it to be as it is. Allow it to be as it is. The I is investigate what is happening now in the body. See the themes here? What is happening now in the body? And the last one, hers is different. It's a non-identification. So when it comes up, you realize that this experience I'm having right now is temporary and is not me, and that it's temporary. You know, I'm always around, but this is a temporary experience. A practice which you may or might not have heard, maybe if you've heard me speak, is one by Jet Ferris called the Aso practice. And this is the one that I work with the most, and which we'll be doing as part of the meditation today. It's where the A is acknowledge. So you acknowledge the feeling inside, what's present. The first S is soften around it. So you actually imagine softening the muscles or the area around the sensation. And the second S is space. Give it as much space as it wants to have in your body or in the room or however big it wants to get. And the last one is open. Open to it. Again, that's acknowledge, soften, space, and open. And ideally open with kindness, by the way. And then with depression, just in general, it's always good to do physical exercise. I mean, of all the studies on depression or depressed mood, exercise is the most impressive intervention of all, more than all the others, actually. And the research shows you want to physically exercise 4 to 5 times a week, getting your heart rate up for 20 to 30 minutes. So it's a cardiovascular exercise. But it can actually just be very fast-paced walking. That's fine, too, if you do that for 20, 30 minutes. And then the last practice is just keeping yourself busy, believe it or not. So when you're depressed, simply keeping yourself busy, even though you don't feel at all like going to the gym, or you don't feel at all like talking to your friend, you don't feel like even getting out of bed. If you can, make yourself do it anyway. So just doing things alone will keep you going, moving through things. I mean, of course, if you have depression that is completely stymieing you, then I would talk to a professional person. Right? So try all these practices. They're all very helpful. But if nothing works at all, please talk to someone who is a therapist or a mindfulness-based practitioner like myself. We have several here at Insight Santa Cruz. All right. So with that, I want to open this up for questions and comments and you guys to talk to each other. And I just want to say again, thank you so much for all of your openness and your hearts and your willingness to share in this space. And I want to preface this practice by saying that this is an intensified practice. It's one where you are going to be moving towards what's difficult. So I want you to be gentle with yourselves. And remembering what we talked about last time, if you were here, that if something's too much, if you can't stay with it any longer, just move away from it and go back to your anchor and then go back to it whenever you can. But I will be prompting you to stay with it longer than you might normally do that. So the meditation really is about increasing our body and our emotional awareness. It's about especially moving from thoughts to sensation, and also noticing the even subtle movements of sensation inside, ideally to stay with the sensation long enough so that you move towards awareness, towards just openness in the body. So if you do stay with sensations long enough, oftentimes there will be an openness or an experience of space where we simply just experience awareness. It doesn't always happen, but it can happen. All right, so just go ahead and notice how your body is, posture is right now. Notice the contact that you have with the cushion, with the chair, with the floor. I welcome you to sit or stand up or lie down for this meditation. Feel free to close your eyes or have them open, with a downward gaze, soft on the floor, if you can. Just notice how your body is feeling right now. Just scan the body and see what's present for you. any sensations or emotions or thoughts. Now focusing on the pelvis area or the stability of that pelvic girdle as the spine moves up from that place if you're sitting down. If you're lying down, just allowing your spine to be straight and flat. From the pelvis, moving up vertebra by vertebra, so the spine is sitting one vertebra on top of each other, moving upward towards the sky, in a way that feels straight and erect and yet relaxed. Oftentimes it's helpful to very gently move the ears back so they move over the shoulders, centered over the shoulders, and to gently move the chin down to expand the back of the neck until the head is sitting just right on top of the spine. And also move a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right if you'd like, just to make sure that you're centered in your positioning, using the internal sensation of your body for you to know it's just the right posture to sit for the next 20 minutes or so. Resting your hands on your legs or in your lap or wherever is best for you. And then coming to whatever meditation anchor is best for you, whether that's the breath or sound meditation or meditation on the sensations of the body, just choose whatever anchor is best and begin to focus there. And for the first part of our meditation tonight, I'd like you to notice when a thought occurs, label that thought, and then move to the physical sensation that might be related to it. And then just be with the physical sensation. You can label the thought as planning thought, negative thought about the future, negative thought about me, or simply thought or thinking. And then gently come back to the physical sensation that might be related to it and stay there if you can. And now I'd like you to, or invite you to, think of something that would create something difficult to think about that would create an emotion inside your body. Something that would be sad or angry thought. You can tell a story that's fine to do at this time for this meditation. Anything that you know that would be a difficult thought to bear, bring that to mind first. And from that thought, move to the emotion in your body. See if you can identify what the emotion is related to the thought. And then move to the physical sensations in the body related to that. Sometimes it's helpful to bring in that difficult thought again or that story to intensify it and generate more feeling in the body. You're trying to create this, to make it happen this time. Bring in the thought again if you need to intensify the sensations in your body. Now I'd like you to notice all the subtleties of the sensations if you can. Notice if there's texture to the feeling in your body. Is there a temperature? Is it hot or cold? Is it heavy or light? Is there movement of it? Notice all the aspects of the sensation in your body. And see if you can intensify them just a little bit more. If it gets to be too much, move away from that and go to your anchor of stability, your breath or something else to anchor yourself. But if you can stay with it longer, do that. Try to keep it even more intense, increasing the intensity over time. Seeing if you can just stay with it being more intense over time. Feel free to let tears flow, or for you to feel whatever you're feeling. Bring in the thought again if you need to, but allow the body to feel what it feels when you have this difficult thought. Try to stay with it. Focus on the sensation only. Now, yes, move away from thoughts completely and just focus on the sensation. You can also breathe into the sensation if you need to. Now go back to your anchor, give yourself a break for a little while, go back to the breath, go back to sound sensation, sound meditation, or sensation of the body, whatever's going to help to ground you, stabilize you, bring you back to the present moment in a big way in the body. Bring metta into your practice at this time, some kindness for yourself. That was too intense for you, still feel free to stay with this anchor, but where I'm going to guide you to go back there again. But feel free to stay here if that's better for you. For those of you who are up for it, I want you to bring back that difficult thought and feel those sensations that come up from that. It might be different, might be the same. Bring in the story, intensify the sensations as much as you can. Notice all the subtleties. Intensify them as much as you can in the body. Build your capacity to tolerate and be with them. Move away from the thoughts completely and just stay with the sensations. Now we're going to do the aso practice with those sensations. Acknowledge their presence. That's the A. Acknowledge the presence of the sensations. They are there. Soften around them. Imagine softening the space or the muscles around that area. And give them as much space as they want to have in your body or outside your body. Give them as much space as they want. And then simply be open to them with kindness. Just open yourself to them fully. Stay with just the sensations, no thoughts. Just go to the sensation only and focus on them. Acknowledge them, soften around them, give them space, and open fully to them with kindness. Stay with that part of the body that they're in or where the sensation was. Even if it's gone, just stay with that part of the body. Just stay with being open to whatever arises there. And as you imagine, just staying with yourself, staying open to what was arising, just staying with being open there. See if you can find anything that is positive or warm, if there's any sweetness there. Is there any kindness there for yourself for having to experience this? See whatever might arise to help you and to support you in this moment. And now allowing yourself, finally, towards the end of this meditation, to go to your heart or heart space, the middle of your chest, and try to find some level of kindness and compassion, any loving kindness for yourself in this moment. Allowing yourself to go to these difficult places. See if you can find any warmth or kindness for yourself. If you are unable to, even noticing the desire to find kindness or warmth for yourself is fine. And if you can find some level of warmth or metta for yourself, allow that to begin to spread from your heart to the entire body. Flood your entire body with it. And you can say metta phrases if you'd like inside your mind. May I feel more peace. May I feel more peace. May I feel more kindness towards myself. May I feel more kindness towards myself. May I find more ease of body and mind. May I have ease of body and mind. You can feeling those words as they, the vibration of the sound of them moves through the body, feeling the warmth as much as you can inside you. And now coming back to the breath, where your anchor, whatever anchor is best for you for stabilization, the breath or sound or physical sensation. Definitely giving thanks to yourself for being willing to show up today, to hear all these ideas, to do this practice, and to be there for yourself more in these difficult places that are so hard to be with. Just give yourself kindness and some gratitude for that.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.